Well, in the bulletin, it says the sermon is, what difference does Bethlehem make? And I guess it depends on what Bethlehem is for you. If Bethlehem is a place that is 6,100 miles around the world, if it is just a place that is 5 miles south of Jerusalem, a part of the Jerusalem metro area, 1.2 plus million people, then maybe it doesn't make much of a difference in your life. But what we've been encouraging our folks to do here this Advent season as we approach this Christmas season is to think of Bethlehem as a spiritual place, a place where God is with us and where we are with God. It is an intimate spiritual connection. And if that's what Bethlehem is for us, then it makes all the difference in the world. You see, it brings with it hope. Hope. It shows us the way. It leads us to peace, and it is the true source of all of our joy. But I wonder, are we worshiping this properly? There was a story of a family that transformed their family room into just this beautiful Christmas display. They had all these different lights. They had the beautiful Christmas tree, and the family turned off all the other lights just to marvel at what they had created. And then their son said, what does this have to do with Jesus at all? And the question is, do our Christmas celebrations focus on Jesus? What is the focus of our Christmas celebrations? What is our focus? There was a little girl whose parents were starting to get a little edgy. You see, they were going to be hosting. Everyone was coming to their house, and so they were making all of these arrangements. They were cleaning things up. They were rearranging their furniture, and this little girl felt like her parents had no time for her anymore. As a matter of fact, on more than one occasion, she heard her parents say, "Would you please get out of the way?" I'm sure none of us who are parents have ever said anything like that to our children. "Would you please get out of the way?" And so she went into her bedroom because it was nighttime, and she knelt before her bed, and this was her prayer. "Our Father, who art in heaven, please forgive us our Christmases as we forgive those who Christmas against us." Truth be told, sometimes our Christmases are an affliction to somebody else. Intensity instead of joy. Wishing instead of hope. Astray instead of following the way. Joyless. Truly joyless. Well, this Advent season began with a story. And I want to tell the story again, because if you haven't heard it, if you weren't with us, I think it's going to touch you. And if you've heard it before 4 weeks ago, I think it still has truths for us today. It's a story about a man. He was a wealthy man, a successful man, an art collector. He was an art curator. He loved everything about the classics. He had the largest single privately held art collection. Rembrandt, Monet, young Picasso. I mean, he had it all. And much to his surprise, he fell in love. Suddenly, he felt truly alive. Turns out that when a man meets a woman, in his case, you know, it can do something for him that art could not. And so they fell madly in love, and sure enough, before too long, she was with child. And they were so excited. They started to nest to get their house all ready, and then the contractions came, and off they went. What a source of joy. Except the mother passed away during childbirth, something that still happens in our world. It used to happen more frequently before. And the father was devastated. Now, fortunately, the child, the son, was very, very healthy, a very healthy son. And this father made up his mind. He was going to do everything he could. He was going to make sacrifices. He was going to travel less. He was going to be there for that child. So that child knew that he had a parent that loved him more than anything. And that's what he did. And the young boy started to grow up. And much to the father's delight, the boy started to take interest in art. And so he started taking his son on these trips around the world to find new pieces of art and to introduce him to some of the classics and the masters. And the father's heart was just bursting because they had a shared passion. Well, suddenly it wasn't safe to travel around the world. The world was suddenly at war. And sure enough, Uncle Sam came calling for the son, and off to war he went, across the ocean. There was a knock on the father's door one day, and there was somebody there with a stern face. There was a telegram. His son had been killed while trying to carry a friend back to the medical tent because they had been wounded, and he was shot just steps before the medical tent. The father was devastated. What parent here would not be devastated at the loss of a child, an only child, the last connection to the love of his life? And so he turned inward, and he didn't go out much anymore, and his existence really became a sad existence. Well, one Christmas Eve, there were no decorations, there were no lights, there was no joy of the season. There was another knock on the door. And when the father opened up the door, there was a young soldier in full military wear, and he was clutching a package. And the young man introduced himself, and he said, "You know, I was the man your son was carrying when he got that fatal wound, and we were so close to that medical tent. And what I want you to know is I really appreciated your son. He was a friend like I have never had before. And even when it was crazy all around us, we somehow found comfort with each other. And we had a shared passion for art. He taught me so much about art. And I want to thank you for that. I'm so sorry for the loss of your son." He said, I'm a painter. I'm no good. I don't paint classics like you have. But I want to give this to you." And so he handed the package to the father, and the father opened up the package, and as soon as he saw it, his eyes started to well up with tears. It was a painting the young man had made of his son. It was a portrait. Now, anyone who knows art would know that it was not a masterpiece. It was not a classic. It was just a portrait by an amateur. But when the father saw it, he saw his son's true essence. He loved that picture, and he took it to the mantle. He took off one of the classics and put it right there so that every day he could see it and be reminded of his son. He embraced that soldier, and off he went. A few years later, that father passed away. And the art community was abuzz. The greatest single privately held collection of art is going to go to auction. And so when the auction day came, the auction house was just packed, standing room only. Everyone had their paddles with their numbers, and they were so excited to get a Monet, to get a Rembrandt, to get a Van Gogh. I mean, it was all there for them. And so it began, and the auctioneer came out and showed the very first piece of art and said, "Okay, our lot number one here," and it was the portrait of the son. And the art collector started to grumble, "Come on, just get rid of this. That nobody wants that. Get to the good stuff." And so the auctioneer said, "Do I hear a bid of $100? $100. Nothing but more grumbling and anger. "Get to the classics." Finally, one man raised his pedal and said, "Okay, I'll give you $100 for that. I was friends with the father. I knew that boy when he was just a child. I'll pay the $100 so that we can get on with the auction." And so the auctioneer said, $100 going once, going twice, sold to that gentleman. Everyone was excited to see what piece was going to come out next. And then the auctioneer closed the book and said, "This concludes the auction." And everyone was upset. It was almost like a riot. They're, "What's going on? This can't be. Get to the good stuff." And the auctioneer said, "Nope. The will was very simple, and the will was very clear. Whoever takes the son gets it all. Whoever takes the son gets it all." And I think that is, in essence, a perfect Christmas story. You see, whoever takes the son, whoever receives Emmanuel, whoever lives in the spiritual place of Bethlehem, we get it all. But what does that really mean? What is it that Christmas gives to us? Howard Thurman was a professor at Boston University, African-American theologian. He was actually the mentor. He was the one that helped Dr. King, Martin Luther King Jr., get all the way through his doctorate. And as a matter of fact, Dr. King always carried three books with him wherever he went: the Bible, Gandhi's writings on peaceful resistance, and Howard Thurman's book, Jesus and the Disinherited. But this is what Howard Thurman once wrote about Christmas. He wrote, "When the song of the angel is stilled, When the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, then the real work of Christmas begins. And so we ask, what is the real work of Christmas? As Christians, what's the real work of Christians? To find the lost, friends, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to visit the prisoner, to stand up for those and have voice for those who have no voice, to work for justice, to bring peace among all of God's children, our brothers and sisters, to make music in the heart. That is the real work of Christmas. And yet Christmas is going to be gone early in January. The trees are going to come down. The suspense of what that gift under the tree has been that I've been looking at, shaking, it's all going to be gone. All going to be gone. But here's what Thurman said. But may the music linger. May the songs of peace and goodwill forever be in our hearts. May our homes be filled with the fragrances, sounds, and excitement of Christmas forever. May we take its message with us so that all the world might be touched by it as we have been touched by it. God has done something spectacular. You know, we think we need to get to a mountaintop experience to experience God, but there's a parable, a modern parable, of a man who was climbing up the mountain to experience God, and he was so focused on his climb up that he missed the fact that God was coming down. God was looking for that man, came down, and that's what Christmas is. Love came down. Love comes down. As U2 and B.B. King said in that song, when love comes to town, I'm going to catch that train. When love comes to town, I'm going to catch that flame. Maybe I was wrong to ever let you down, but I did what I did before love came to town. Well, friends, love came down. Love's in town. How are we going to respond? There was a preacher, and his family started to put up a nativity in the front yard. You know, we see them, and any of you have decorations in your front yard? There's some. We love to drive around and look at nighttime at the houses with all these decorations. And there was a nativity set, and they had a spotlight on it. And the son said, I know what's missing. So the son ran into the house and came out with this gigantic inflatable Tyrannosaurus Rex. He said, this has to be there. And the preacher, the father, said, well, you know, son, actually, there were no dinosaurs there at the manger, and the boy was adamant, and it was so huge it was almost ridiculous. And actually, when I came in today, I noticed that some child left two dinosaurs in our narthex back there on the bookcase. There is an orange T-Rex right out there. Only church probably in the world that has an orange T-Rex right in the narthex for everyone to see. Well, this thing was twice as big as anything else. It was just towering over this nativity set. It kind of looked like Godzilla about to step on the Holy Family in the manger scene there. But this is what the preacher said in a Christmas sermon after reflecting upon that giant T-Rex behind the manger. He said, it dawned on me that maybe that dinosaur was saying more than we realized. That over each of us, there is this menacing character that threatens to rob us of all of our joy and peace and cheer. But then comes Christmas and reminds us that the baby in the manger is stronger than all the dinosaurs in your life or in my life, and that God has given us victory through the gift of Emmanuel. On my way into church this morning, I drive east on Silver Spring to get here, and if you've spent a lot of time driving on Silver Spring, which I assume many of you have, you know that about every 50 yards, it seems like there's a brand new stop-and-go light, and if you don't hit it right, you stop at every one. Can I get an amen? Amen. Okay, you're still awake. That's good. Well, I didn't hit it right on my way in today, and so I stopped at every single light. And I started to look in my rearview mirror, and I could see this couple in the car behind me just this morning. And the wife was crying and sobbing and wailing. She was shaking. Her husband, I could see every time I stopped, I looked in my rearview mirror. You know, he looked kind of upset, but I couldn't tell if he was upset at some piece of news that they had just had. or that they had just heard. But it dawns on me that they had a T-Rex in the back seat of that car, something that was towering over them. I have no idea if that husband and wife are Christian or if they are going to be at a worship service anywhere this day, but it's my prayer that they are. It's my prayer that no matter what kind of news they just received, no matter what kind of hurt, no matter what kind of anguish they were experiencing, that they were able to come to a house of worship and celebrate that this birth of Emmanuel makes a difference. That there is joy in the world, that no matter how bad the news is, there is hope. Because friends, we know it to be true, there is suffering, but God came to bear it with us. There is uncertainty, and God came to lead us through it. There is death, and God came to overcome it. Jesus, Bethlehem, Christmas makes all the difference. Those who take the Son get it all. And that is great good news. Amen.